Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So as Boston gets back to work a week after the Marathon bombings, so many in the community have mobilized to confront the lifelong challenges of the injured. One of the grim realities of last week's events was how the combat-style violence of improvised explosive devices demanded medical lessons learned in battle to treat the injured, many of whom lost limbs to the shrapnel and blasts. I suppose it's not something to throw a party over exactly, but we are living in a truly exciting moment in the development of prosthetic medicine, and researchers in Boston are at the center of it all, with some of the most advanced rehab facilities in the world. Among the folks to hear the call to help the injured from the Marathon bombings are the people at the MIT Media Lab's Biomechatronics Research Group. The group develops technologies that allow mechanical prosthetics to function quite literally as extensions of the human body. Elliot Rouse is a postdoctoral associate with the group. He joins us in the studios of WGBH, our partner in Boston. Elliot, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So given that amputation sites, and let's talk about legs exclusively just for the moment here, are all different. What does it take to develop an interface between the body and a prosthesis that really delivers on this promise of allowing prosthetics to be an extension of the human body?
So our group really begins with trying to understand biomechanically how the human body works. So we use muscle models and programs to look at that. And then we use that information to sort of extend in the mechanical realm the limb in that sense.
I mean, you're really talking about weaving in the biology of the amputation site into some sort of mechanical device, be it a robotic leg or a partially robotic leg. What kinds of things are you working on?
So currently, we have developed a robotic ankle prosthesis that uses sort of an onboard set of computers to make calls about what the user is trying to do, and then it can change modes and let the user walk forward or go upstairs. It's a very intelligent device.
And when you heard about the injuries in the Boston Marathon, I mean, did you have confidence that these individuals would be available to take advantage of some of this technology and so many other approaches to prosthetics that, you know, really not so much your competition, but part of a whole new world of prosthetics right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we are every day sort of working on these devices and getting them closer and closer to the able-bodied biology, and it will be exciting to sort of have this technology that we're developing sort of end up in the clinic one day and eventually be used by these individuals.
Now, one of the issues that I referred to a moment ago is just how amputation sites are different because of the circumstances of the amputation. Some people are amputated mm-hmm. because they have some sort of disease, bone cancer, et cetera. There are people who have genetic chronic deformities that mean they're born without legs, but then there are the kinds of injuries that we saw last week because of the bombings. How much are you and others thinking in terms of a kind of standard interface where you'd be able to basically standardize the amputation site and create an interface that almost plugs into some set of devices like a USB plugs into a computer, for instance?
So that's a very interesting question. One of the projects that we're working on in our group is basically mapping the residual limb, the mechanical properties of it, and then using additive manufacturing techniques like rapid prototyping, basically printing the interface between the prosthesis and the residual limb, which is typically referred to as a socket.
And what is more important, having available muscles to use to trigger and interact with a prosthesis, or is it solid bone to anchor to?
So that's, also another very good point. Regarding lower limb prostheses, there is not a lot of work that uses the muscle signals yet to control the devices. They're mostly done with artificial intelligence that makes a call on what sort of mode the user is doing. But upper limb prostheses use a lot of electric signals, and there's sort of this contradiction between, as you amputate farther up the limb, you have fewer and fewer muscle signals to use as control sites.
Oh, that's interesting. So there are more. There's more muscle available to create a control interface lower down on the leg than farther up towards the actual hip and into the thigh.
Yeah, so if you're just thinking, you know, we use these muscle signals to control a prosthesis, if you are missing a single joint, you can use the residual muscles along that limb to maybe control that joint. But if you're missing three joints, now you have far less musculature to use to control, and you have far more joints to control. So that's sort of a paradox that we sort out.
And part of what you're describing here is the enormous challenge that is really faced towards dealing with more complicated amputations and more complicated rehab. For instance, dealing with a shoulder-arm issue, you've got a hugely increased amount of data that's required to control a hand and an arm, and a more limited site for attaching some kind of prosthesis, yes?
That's correct. Yeah, and that's exactly the phenomenon I'm describing.
Can the lessons you learned from lower extremity prosthetics work in shoulder and some of the more complicated amputations and injuries that you've dealt with on the battlefield and that are going to be the case here in Boston?
Yeah, they can. I mean, so the lower limb is sort of a good proving grounds for the technology because you have to have such high confidence in the call that you're making for what the user is trying to do. So if I have an upper limb prosthesis and it malfunctions and I drop my cup of coffee, you know, that's not ideal. But if I'm making a call on a lower limb prosthesis that I'm going down a set of stairs and I'm actually not, and I fall over, you know, that's a far more serious issue.
I'm wondering, Elliot, when you heard a week ago about the bombings and the nature of the injuries, if you and members of your team emotionally felt called on some level, along with so many others, first responders, et cetera, to basically step up and really bring whatever it is you can to the table to help the people who are injured.
Yeah, definitely, I think so. I mean, every day we are working in our group, you know, around the clock to sort of push the limits of robotic prosthetic design and control. And, you know, like when we see, you know, a tragedy like this occur, you know, it just sort of spurs us on all the more. You know, like we're, you know, every day we're getting closer and closer to something that we think will, like, significantly impact the quality of life of these individuals in the future.
Do you think this is a good time? I mean, it's kind of crazy to say, a good time to have this kind of an injury based on the technology that you and others are working on?
I think it is an exciting time, actually, yeah, for prosthetics in general. So we have the machines that we've never had before that can replicate the degrees of freedom of human limbs, and we're sort of on the cusp of tapping into the nervous system and then allowing us to sort of really know what the user is trying to do through neural signals. So I think like that will occur within my lifetime for sure.
Elliot Rouse, postdoctoral associate at the MIT Media Lab's Biomechatronics Research Group. Elliot, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So we want you to get an early jump on all of our conversations. You can be a part of our listener response network. You can sign up for our texts. One text a day. We ask you a question featured on the next day's show. What's your reaction to the events in Boston? What's your view on our policy in Iran? All things that we talked about this hour. Your voice then becomes a part of our on-air conversation. All you have to do is text the word START to 69866. That's START to 69866. And if you want to catch up on any of the conversations in the program, listen back to anything on the program, check us out at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. We're back in New York. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.